Last week, President Bush signed into law a major expansion of Medicare. Among other things, this bill will add a prescription drug benefit. It won't take effect right away, but eventually it will, in 2006. It will also encourage insurance companies to offer private plans to people who are now in that federal program. It is one of the biggest and most expensive pieces of legislation to come out of Congress in a long time. On this first hour of Focus 580 today, we'll talk about the new law, try to look at some of its provisions, and also some of the politics behind its passage. And as our guest this morning, we have Mary Agnes Carey. She's a senior writer with Congressional Quarterly and has followed this issue quite closely. She's joining us by telephone. As we talk, questions are welcome. I know if you have questions about either of those two general areas, that is, what's in this bill and some of the political negotiations that were behind its passage, I'm sure she'll do her best to give you an answer. All you have to do is call us here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that means if you would be listening over the air around Illinois and Indiana, where that signal will travel, or if you might happen to be listening on the Internet and you're interested in calling, as long as you're in the United States, you may use the toll-free line, and that is 800-222-9455. At any point, your questions are welcome. We just ask people to be brief so that we can keep the program moving and get in as many callers as possible, but anyone's welcome. Again, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Ms. Carey, hello.
Hi.
Thank you for talking with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, we appreciate it very much. Before getting into talking about the specifics of the bill, I'd like to talk a little bit about the political machinations surrounding it. And I think that some people would say that maybe the most remarkable thing about it is that it passed at all, given the fact that that such bills had been proposed before. And in fact, for the Congressional Quarterly, you wrote a piece on it and wrote the very first graph reads like this. Over the past two Congresses, efforts to overhaul Medicare have followed the same pattern. A Republican-written bill passes the GOP-controlled House only to die in the more closely divided Senate. This year was different. What made the difference?
Members of both parties, Democrats and Republicans alike, had campaigned on this thing for years. So in essence, it was time to deliver. I think that the issue had risen in the public perspective to one where they needed an answer from Congress. There were also other factors at play. President Bush made this his top domestic priority. So he began to turn up the pressure, wanting to have a benefit passed, kind of put the word out, if you will, to party members, even conservatives who dislike this bill because they think it's going to cost too much money. The president made it clear he wanted this to happen. He wanted it to happen now. Another factor that affected both parties is that there was $400 billion on the table to do a drug benefit this year. Every year Congress passes something called a budget resolution, which is sort of a glide path to how much different pieces of legislation will cost. $400 billion was the most that had been put up in a budget resolution that had been voted on by both chambers in a while, and also we have increasing deficits in this country in the federal budget, so people knew the fact that we're getting more budget deficits meant maybe next year there wouldn't be $400 billion in the budget. And so when you look at all those factors together, and also next year's a presidential year, and something this big is very unlikely to pass Congress in a presidential year. Mm-hmm. So if the fact is everybody's been running on it, the president really wanted it, $400 billion on the table, and next year's an election year, which meant if it didn't happen now, it was going to be put off till 2006 or possibly 2005 or 2006. And it's just a big problem in this country that seniors need some help with their drug coverage. So everything, sort of all these forces combined to move the bill, even though you've got Democrats and Republicans both unhappy with it, it sort of was a very interesting confluence of events that helped pass it this year.
Yeah. One of the things that also struck me as really interesting was the public reaction to the bill. And I'm looking here at a story that just ran, I guess it was on the day that it was passed, in the Washington Post. And they did a poll. This was a Washington Post ABC News poll asking people what they thought about it. And what they found was, first of all, that large numbers of Americans said they didn't pay any attention to it at all and had no opinion about it. And so when they looked at how it broke down, they said apparently public opinion broke down roughly in two-thirds. 38% said that they disapproved, 32% approved, 30% said they didn't have any opinion one way or another. And when you look at those people who were opposed to the bill, they tended to cluster among seniors, which maybe is what you not surprising that those were the people that were going to be paying most attention to it. But and then there's an interesting comment in the story from Andy Kohut. Well-known pollster, often heard on NPR and quoted in newspaper articles and so forth, who directs the Pew Research Center. He says, this is a surprisingly tepid response to this big legislation. The Congress and the President aren't getting any credit for trying. I would have guessed that the approval scores would have been higher. I guess I wonder what you think about the public reaction to this legislation.
Well, I think that a lot of people didn't know about it because a lot of news organizations haven't necessarily focused a lot of energy on it. It's a big priority for us at Congressional Quarterly because, of course, we watch Congress and follow it in depth. But a lot of reporters for a lot of other institutions have been working on a variety of other things, whether it be the war coverage or the economy or you name it. They have a lot of different things they're following. So I think the public got hit with a lot of stories at one time at passage that there's a Medicare drug bill. And what will be more interesting to watch even now is as the benefit is phased in, for example, you've got a drug card that comes into effect probably about next May or June as the first step, and then you'll have the drug benefit in January 1st, 2006. It would be really neat to go back and talk to the same people if you could. What do you think about it now when more of the details come out? Because in that fall of 2005, seniors are going to start getting specific information about these are what your options are and this is what's available to you. And I think that then the public will learn even more about the benefit and will have a whole different view of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think also what happened was almost as soon as the bill passed, there were a lot of people saying, I guess particularly it was Democrats who were saying this. They said, look, we supported this because we thought this was the best way we're going to get right now. But we're not exactly happy with it. We think it has problems. And as soon as we get the chance, we're going to go back and we're going to start to tinker with it. So I guess that would suggest that the door on this issue is not closed. Is it likely you think, do people around Washington think that this is going to continue to be a big issue next year as we have people running for Congress and we have a presidential race?
Well, I think the issue you're going to hear about a lot will be why doesn't the government have the power to negotiate the prices of drugs for all Medicare beneficiaries? Democrats have already talked about that a lot. It's in a couple of bills that are being proposed to make changes to the legislation. And what the bill does is it would allow insurers can get a piece of the market, if you will, if seniors sign up for their plans, and those different insurance companies negotiate prices. But the bill prohibits the federal government from doing that, and proponents of the bill said they did that because that would be equal to having price controls, and price controls could hurt drug development in this country. And it's something that people philosophically, many people in the Congress disagree with, but also many people in Congress like this idea. Many Democrats like this idea, and I think the issue of why doesn't the government negotiate on behalf of all 40 million Medicare beneficiaries will be a very, very big issue. The Democrats may come back to try to fix what's a gap in coverage. The bill covers, the government under this bill would cover about 75% of a senior's drug cost to $2,250, and then your catastrophic coverage wouldn't kick in until that senior had paid $3,600 out of pocket for drugs. Democrats are going to come back and try to narrow that gap. And I think the political popularity of this issue means you're going to keep hearing about it and hearing about it and hearing about it.
Yeah. Obviously here, the issue of the high cost of prescription drugs was something that people have been talking about for a long time. It's a leading kind of issue. And while this legislation does provide some assistance, initially a little bit and then a little bit more later on when it fully kicks in 2006, I'm sure that there are some people who said that there was surprisingly little discussion of anything dramatic that the government could have done to address the cost on the sort of on the supply end. That is, rather than saying, well, you seniors who are paying a lot of money, we'll give you a little bit of help with the cost. Some people to say, well, we need to go actually right to the source. We should go to the pharmaceutical companies and do something to address the cost there. And instead, there was really nothing about that, nothing about price control, nothing about the issue of do we want to allow reimportation of drugs from Canada, for example, or any place else? And it seemed that anything like that that would have been really dramatic was just not up for discussion.
I think that there was a fear Well, there are a couple of issues. Number one, there wasn't really the political votes to get that through. If you wanted this bill to pass, you knew because of the diversity and the passionateness of the opinions involved in allowing the government to negotiate prices on behalf of beneficiaries or putting some sort of price control or allowing drug reimportation, that those issues would have probably killed this bill in this Congress. So if you wanted the bill to pass, you stepped away from those issues. You may recall the House of Representatives this summer passed a bill that would have allowed consumers and pharmacists and wholesalers and others to re-import drugs from 25 industrialized countries. These would have been drugs approved by the Food and Drug Administration for use in this country and manufactured in FDA-approved facilities. That passed in the House of Representatives, and it became the negotiating position for the House of Representatives when it passed, but it was ignored in the bill. Part of the reason it was ignored is because hours after the House passed this drug reimportation bill, about 53 senators signed a letter opposing it, saying we're worried it's going to have a flood of, it's going to bring a lot of drugs into this country that will be unsafe, and therefore we oppose this bill. So that was a signal to the Medicare conferees. Those are the members of the House and the Senate on a Medicare conference committee that looked at the House bill and the Senate drug bill and made it into one, which finally passed both chambers and the president signed. It was a message to those conferees to sort of sidestep this issue. But that doesn't mean it won't come back. I mean, it's pretty common in Congress to take a bite of the apple now, and you come back and you take another, and you take another, and that's to the point you made earlier that this legislation will be with us for a long time.
Yeah. Just one other, I want to talk just a little bit more about the prescription drug coverage, and then we have a caller here, so I want to make sure that person knows I'm not going to wait, make them wait forever. But just to review, what's going to happen here when this goes into effect in 2006, that basically people will pay, there will be a monthly charge, and then there will be a deductible, so they'll have to put out initially out of pocket a certain amount of money. And then when they've gotten to that level, then again up to another threshold level, it will pay part of the cost. Then there's this gap. Then once they get up to another, see, that's sort of what makes it very confusing, is there are a lot of numbers here.
Yes.
But once it gets up to another level there, then the coverage will kick in again, and there it will pay even more. So at that first level, it pays, I think, 75%.
Right.
And then once you get up to this higher level, it pays 95%. But then there's this hole in the middle where there's still a big gap that it's not doing anything.
Right. And the reason they have that is because the political consensus was that this is what $400 billion would buy. Mm-hmm. And to do a benefit that might be similar to the one that most people under 65 in the workforce have, where we do meet a deductible and we have co-pays, but we don't have a gap, that would have been extremely expensive. Now, people that wanted that sort of continuous coverage said, well, you know, if it costs $1 trillion over 10 years, then let's do it. That's what this country should do for its elderly. And they believed that that was important. But that view did not prevail. And that's why you have a benefit that the proponents of this bill feel it does the most for the greatest number of seniors. And even though there is a gap, there are statistics that show, I believe, a very large number of seniors have drug bills below that $2,250 amount, which is what the 75% covers. But every senior, when this comes out, this benefit starts in 2006, you're going to have to sit down, I think, with a piece of paper and a pencil at the kitchen table and figure out if it's something that you need or want or can't afford.
Hmm. So you mentioned the price tag here, the number that's put on this bill, $400 mm-hmm. million.
A billion.
With the B. Now we're talking about real money.
There you go.
$400 billion. Now, is almost all of that the price tag for the prescription drug coverage?
About half of that is the subsidies for the low-income seniors. If you're up to 150% of poverty, there's help from the government with your premiums, with your deductibles, with your co-pays. About 75 to 80 billion of that is money that's going to be given in subsidies to employers who currently provide retiree health coverage. And the government is very, Congress is very, very interested in keeping those employers in the game, because if they drop their retirees, if an employer were to say, well, the government's doing it, I don't have to, so I'm going to drop my employee coverage, retiree coverage, that would put even more pressure on the the federal government. So you've got money spent there. You've got about $12 to $14 billion that will be given in incentives to the private insurance companies to get them offering Medicare benefits and to stay in the Medicare game. So there are different pieces in different places, but those are pretty big chunks to look at.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Mary Agnes Carey. She is a senior writer with Congressional Quarterly, and we're talking about some of the provisions of the new Medicare law that was signed into effect by President Bush last week. And if you have questions, please do call 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. A couple questions for you. It doesn't make any sense to me, but why in the world would the government not be able to negotiate prices with these drug companies? I mean, or maybe the question would be, what would the people who agree with the bill, what would their reasons be for saying, no, we can't negotiate with drug companies? And I'll just hang up and listen. Thank you.
All right.
Their argument would be that that is akin to putting a price control from the federal government on the insurance companies, that if the Secretary of Health and Human Services, which runs the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which runs Medicare, if you could follow all that, if the HHS Secretary were to go to the pharmaceutical industry and say, this is the price we'll pay for Lipitor, which I believe is a cholesterol drug, this is the price we'll pay for this heart control, blood pressure drug, whatever, that's a price control. And philosophically, that goes against what many people feel is what we should, it's what they feel we should not be doing in this country. So that's what the proponents would argue. They would also argue that if you put price controls on the drug industry, that it will curtail development in breakthrough drugs because it costs, lots and lots of money to develop a new drug, and America is known for that, and that will be a disincentive because you'll be reducing their profit margins for the drug industry. Now, of course, people on the other side of this would argue, which it sounds like your caller would be in this camp, that doesn't make any sense, it's ridiculous, and if we really want to get drugs for seniors at an affordable price, we'll allow the government to negotiate on their behalf. So that's sort of where the arguments are there.
Hmm. We have talked about probably there are a number of provisions in this legislation. The ones that have gotten most attention, number one probably is the coverage for prescription drugs, and the other are the things that are intended to foster private competition to the government plan. And I want to go on and talk about that. But let me just mention one other thing, because there are some changes here that probably haven't gotten as much attention. And this, apparently there was some changes in this that affect generic drugs and their relationship to brand name drugs. And I guess this would come under the heading of some kind of attempt to overall bring down overall cost.
Right, right. Basically, they want to reduce an ability of a brand name drug maker to continue that patent. And they're limiting the amount of time in which they could continue a patent. And the hope is to get more generic drugs to the market more quickly, to not only lower drug prices for seniors, but to lower them for everyone else. So those were changes in a law known as Hatch-Waxman, which is the shorthand. That was a 1984 law that was designed to get generics in the market more quickly. There's been a lot of press about various abuses. Perhaps a drug maker just changed the color of a pill, or they changed the bottle that it was given in, or they made a slight change on the label, and they would try to manipulate the system to get that patent exclusivity extended. So they went back to revisit that, and they're limiting the amount of automatic stays that occur when a drug maker says, someone has violated my patent, or I want to extend the patent for this particular reason. So that's why that was done.
We have a couple of people here on cell phones, so we'll get to them. And next is line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm calling from Pontiac, Illinois, and I'm a frontline senior worker. We now have 3 state programs that deal with prescriptions. We've got this new one coming from the federal government. Do you know how confused the seniors get? I mean, there's so many things that they have to do to access these programs. They are so confused out here. And I wish somebody could do it a little simpler.
Well, I'm sure I'm sure that's a problem. That's a problem all over.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a horrible problem. A lot of them are throwing their hands and giving up. They people at the state level think that if they tell someone, you know, they, oh, it's been unbelievable this year with the circuit breaker and the different programs. They send out letters, and then they notify all the workers a week later, and in the meantime, seniors are calling us frantic because they think they've been cut off, or they don't understand these programs, and it needs to be done in a much simpler manner. Is there any chance of that happening?
I think that you'll see a lot of efforts to change the benefit. As far as coordination at the state level, I don't know of any particular bill now that would try to address that specifically, but I think what's going to have to happen here is that the state pharmaceutical assistance programs and all, no matter what the program is in any state, you're going to have people on the state level who master the federal legislation and figure out how it dovetails and how it works, and they're going to have to communicate that to people. And it's there's no doubt it will be another burden on state programs and state regulators to do this. But the hope is that programs that, let's say you have a state program that goes beyond the federal program, that would be allowed to continue. You hope that duplication will be eliminated, so if it's offered at the federal level and the state doesn't have to do it, it won't have to do it. But it's just something I think that people in states, and like your caller who deals with the elderly, are really going to have to learn this bill. For example, you could go to the Kaiser Family Foundation website. I think that web address is www.kff.org. And on that website, you will see a summary of the conference agreement, and you can look at some of those provisions yourself that deal with state drug programs. It's written in common English, and you could look at that. If you wanted to read the bill yourself, you could go to Thomas, which is a famous website that has federal legislation on it, and you could actually read the bill language yourself there. So that may be one thing. If you're involved with the elderly, with senior citizens, you might want to look at some of this legislation yourself,
right,
and work within your own organization. And I hate to ask you to do more work because you sound like you're pretty busy already, but that might be a first step for you to figure out, well, we offer this and the government offers that, and maybe this will be consolidated.
Yeah, and we understand the programs, and we do try to figure out what's best, but we're only seeing a fraction of the people out there. And most of them won't go to websites. These are people who aren't comfortable with it. And there needs to be a way to reach them generally. You can't count on social workers to do it all because a lot of people don't come to us.
Sure.
And they're very confused. I'm just saying, I'm seeing a lot of confusion here in Central Illinois, and I'm sure it's much more widespread than that.
Well, that's a complaint about this bill. And opponents of this bill have said, look, you know, seniors are going to be very confused. You're going to sit down because some things about, there are standardized features of these plans, but private insurers could offer different things, and you'll have to sit down and compare them. And that was a criticism of the bill. Why don't we offer, many Democrats, for example, said, why don't we offer one uniform plan run by the government, offered to seniors all over the country? Let's make it simple. Let's make it easy. But there's not a political consensus on that because a lot of Republicans and some conservative Democrats as well don't like that and worried about the cost. And there's a lot of concern, mostly in the Republican Party, that we've got to get the private sector involved in Medicare, and you've got to give them some freedom to design it because you got all these baby boomers retiring in 2010.
Yeah.
And, you know, that if we just do a government benefit, it's going to go through the roof because you've got all these people in the system. So that's sort of just to give you a window into kind of the political arguments where they're coming from. But I'm very sympathetic to your viewpoint because it is going to be confusing, and seniors will get things mailed to their homes in late 2005 explaining the drug benefit, and I'm sure you're going to be seeing a lot of that when people bring
I'm
it to
sure.
you.
Well, thank you.
All right,
sure.
Thanks for the call. We have another cell phone caller. This is on our line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I'm not a senior eligible for Medicare yet, but I'm approaching that very quickly, and I obviously there is some confusion about this. I think my question is, in terms of the government not negotiating with drug companies, they have fixed the prices that healthcare organizations, hospitals, and HMOs, and physicians can charge for people who are under Medicare. So it would appear, just from a layman, not a politician, that either the American medical association and or their lobbying organization need to be more in tune with what the drug companies are doing. Their lobby effort seems to be working very well. Most of what I've seen on TV about the news articles and so forth tend to be very critical of this, and from my point of view, it would appear that the lobby of the drug companies was very effective in getting protection for the drug companies not to have to go into price negotiations. That's just that. I guess that's my question: are the lobbying organizations in Washington, are they instrumental in what goes on as far as these bills are concerned? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you very much.
All right.
They absolutely are. There's no doubt about it. Every one of those groups you mentioned has a lobbying force, and there's no doubt that the drug industry did prevail on this issue of having forestalled or put off indefinitely whatever the idea that the government could negotiate for Medicare beneficiaries. But to the caller's point, here's something to keep in mind. As the caller notes, Medicare currently tells a hospital, this is what we'll pay you, a doctor, this is what we'll pay you, home health agencies, nursing homes, durable medical equipment, people that provide oxygen and non-customized wheelchairs and all these kind of things, as well as customized wheelchairs. But the government tells you what they're going to pay. So part of me wonders if there may be a time where that pressure builds as well on the drug industry. I can't tell you what Congress is going to do, and as the caller noted, the pharmaceutical drug industry has prevailed on this point and does have a very strong lobbying force. But if drug prescriptions, if drug prices continue to increase, and the more seniors we get in Medicare, that puts more and more pressure on the government to pay for those drugs. And it may just be a matter of time before the government makes a decision, Congress makes a decision, maybe we need to review this, maybe we need to set some prices, set some limits on drug pricing. Maybe they'll decide that broadening drug reimportation in some way is the answer. But it's one thing about Medicare and the government is the government has shown time after time, if you do business with them in Medicare, how you're paid can be revisited, and it can be changed. Sometimes it's increased, sometimes it's decreased. And now that drugs, outpatient prescription drugs, will be covered under Medicare, there's no reason why the government wouldn't go back and revisit this at some point in the future.
All right. We have some other callers here, and let me just quickly reintroduce our guest. We're talking with Mary Agnes Carey. She is a senior writer with Congressional Quarterly. This is a publication that specializes in covering what goes on Capitol Hill, and she has been following this quite closely. We're talking about some of the provisions of the new Medicare bill that President Bush signed into law last week, and questions here are welcome. We will take as many as we can in the time that remains. We're a little bit past our midpoint here. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Back here to Champaign for the next person, and that's line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I'm very confused about the gap coverage. I just did a little math while you were talking, and if your costs are $187 a month, that would be the lower end, up to $300 a month, does this mean that if your cost per month, and I'm assuming this is for an individual, fall in between there, you get no further benefit, or you never did get a benefit, you get no coverage because your costs exceed that a month? How does that work?
Here's the way that it would work, and I hope this answers your question. You'll pay your monthly premiums, right?
Right.
And those are estimated to be about $35 a month, so that's continuous. Then you've got to meet a deductible of $250.
Okay.
Okay. So once you hit that from $251 to $2,250, the government would pay 75% of that, and you would pay 25%.
All right.
And then you're on your own until you've spent $3,600 out of pocket on your drugs. If you're a retiree and your former employer would give you something towards that, it doesn't count. This has to be $3,600 of your own money.
Okay, so, but you, you still have some help up to that $22.50
yes.
cutoff.
Yeah, the government pays 75% of that.
Okay, and then once you exceed that, then you're going to pay 100% until you get to the next limit.
Right, until you get to $3,600, then the government's going to cover 5%. You cover 5%, the government covers 95%.
Yes.
So that'll be an attractive feature for some people who fear high out-of-pocket drug costs. They may already have them, or they fear they may have them, and they want insurance against that. So that's how it would work.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thanks. And again, for people who are, this is obviously very confusing, and for people who are following this conversation, this part of the bill that we're talking about here will not go into effect until 2006. In the meantime, there will be some temporary coverage, but it won't be this. It won't be as much as this. What are they doing to fill in this other gap, this gap for the next 2 years between now and the time that the full coverage thing kicks into effect?
Right. They're going to design something called a Medicare-approved prescription drug card. That would happen 6 months after enactment. The bill passed in November. So you're looking at maybe May or June next year. What you could do is sign up for one of these. You'd pay a fee. The private companies are going to offer them, but they're going to have to go to the government, meet certain specific certifications, and get government authorization. Your enrollment fee, I believe, is up to like $30. And you can sign up for these. Some people already have prescription drug cards. A lot of drug makers offer them. And one criticism of this card is, why do we need this? Because it's already out there in the private market. But be that as it may, the Medicare program will issue these Medicare prescription, Medicare-approved drug cards. You can sign up for one, and you can look at the offerer of the card should be able to tell you what sort of drugs are covered and what the coverage is. The Department of Health and Human Services, which is a federal agency that oversees Medicare, has estimated that seniors could save as much as 25% on their drugs with these cards. Also, for certain low-income beneficiaries, the government will provide up to $600 of assistance with those prescription drug cards. So you could only get one Medicare government drug card, but you could still have, let's say you had a Pfizer drug card, you could keep that drug card, and you could have other manufacturer-offered drug cards, but only one Medicare-approved drug card. The thought is that that can help people start saving until the full benefit comes in January 1st, 2006.
On to another caller. The next person in line, I believe, is in Naperville, line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Mary Agnes, I'm glad that you're talking on this because nobody has, it's not just the seniors that are confused. My husband will be going into this program probably in 06, mm-hmm. but AARP, they haven't a clue. They have papers there. The Medicare doesn't. But my main concern, and I heard Bush make this statement about HMOs, I am livid to think that you either have to go on Medicare or HMOs. HMOs, in my opinion, are a second-rate health care program. Why do we not have, everybody's talking about their prescription benefits. This thing is changing, it sounds to me, maybe I'm mistaken on this, because I really hadn't paid that much attention to this until we're going to become part of this program. This supplemental, if you have supplemental insurance, supposedly you can't use that. The idea of having to go, and they say you can, as Bush put it, you have better choices. Better isn't good enough. I want the best choices. To us, doctors are very important. We want to be able to pick our doctors anytime we want. And the fact that if we want to add, we want to be able to add our own money, are we not allowed to? This is very disconcerting to me. Do you have any answers on this, Mary Agnes?
Yeah, let me try to break this question apart. To your first point, what he's trying to say is, first of all, something to remember here is this is voluntary. If you don't want to enroll in this Medicare prescription drug benefit, you don't have to. That's number one. Number two, you can get a Medicare prescription drug benefit that is separate from a health maintenance organization or a preferred provider.
Oh, you can go.
Yes,
PCO.
Yes, you can get that'll be a standalone drug benefit. You can get that. Okay.
Okay.
Now, if you currently have Medigap drug coverage in your Medigap plan, you can keep that, but you can't enroll in the Medicare drug plan. You can't have Medigap drug coverage can't enroll in what they're going to call it Part D, the new Medicare drug benefit.
But you have that option, so if you want to pay more or if you want to go in another direction, you are allowed to.
Yeah, you're allowed to. This is they're highlighting that this is, they want people to remind people of that. Now, for example, one thing you should know is if you want to enroll in the new federal government benefit, you look at your Medigap drug benefit and you look at the federal government drug benefit and you like the federal government drug benefit better, you can get Medigap for everything else. For your, you know, if you stay in, you stay in fee-for-service Medicare, you can still get Medigap for your Part B deductible. You can get Medigap for your hospital copayment. You can get Medigap for your other items. You just can't get it for drug coverage if you enroll in the government drug benefit. But if you want to stay right where you are, you can. Now,
and you have the option to select any doctor you want, right?
Well, as long as that doctor takes fee-for-service Medicare.
Okay.
And that's another thing. You have to always check with your physicians. Are you taking Medicare? Do you take Medicare payment in full? Do I have a financial responsibility if I come in your office? And you take some doctors take Medicare, but they don't take Medicare payment in full.
Okay.
They balanced bill. They, you know, some people take, I believe it's called assignment, and you take a certain amount of money. But you should always check that. I was on a television show a few weeks ago where a lady called in and said she went, she'd been on Medicare, went to go see her doctor, signed something, and all of a sudden she's paying part of her Medicare charges. Well, this doctor must have changed how he or she takes Medicare and how much, you know, will he take, he or she take Medicare in payment in full, or do you have to pay some of it? So this is something you've got to be judicious about with your physicians and understand how they're interacting with Medicare. But if you want to stay right where you are in your Medigap program, you can. But something everyone should know is that starting January 1st, 2006, no new Medigap policies with drug coverage can be issued. And there's a reason, a variety of reasons why they're doing that, but for your purposes, you should know that you can stay right where you are and get exactly what you want, what you have, and you don't have to change.
Thank you very much.
All
sure.
Right, thanks. I guess listening to your conversation with the caller here makes me think back to the earlier caller who said that she worked with seniors mm-hmm. and that people were extremely confused and that she was expecting people were going to get even more confused.
Right.
And some people would say that that's an unfortunate result of the plan, the desire to try to hold down the cost of health care and give people some choice at the same time. And I know that there are still people who make this argument that it would really be better if we had one system for everybody, and that they're still arguing for a kind of a single-payer approach. The Canadian one is the
right
one that people keep touching on. And I guess I wonder if people in Washington, as they think about these things, as they think about the fact that the number of seniors will grow, the demand for health care will grow, the bill will continue to grow, it's likely that things will get more complicated rather than simpler. Do you think that someday down the road, they see a time when all of that pressure really tips the balance in favor of the idea of some kind of a single-payer system?
I just can't fathom it because single-payer is more than just the government paying all the bills and everything's taken care of. It creates a variety of choices that we may or may not be comfortable with in this country. For example, the Canadian health system, from what I've read and heard about it, a lot of preventative care is done very quickly and easily, but some surgeries are put off, not life-threatening ones, but I mean if it's not necessarily a life-threatening situation, you may get put off for a while. Now, is that something Americans want to accept? Are we willing to make the trade-offs as a country that other countries with single-payer systems have made? And that's something I just don't know if we're ready for that. I don't know if Congress is ready for that, because in some people's minds, not everyone, but in many lawmakers' minds, the idea of socialized a single-payer system would blow a hole through the federal budget and perhaps put us in a situation where we're spending more of our national resources than we want to on health care when we've got education, when we've got a transportation system, when we've got a lot of other things, you know, pressing for the same amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you never know. There are people who were telling me months ago that this bill was never going to pass, it would never happen, and it did. So you can never tell in Washington, and of course, what voters want drives a lot of things. I think the reason why we have a drug benefit right now is because it became a political imperative.
it was a good policy. It is a good policy decision to cover Medicare prescription drugs. Now, how we've designed this benefit is a great debate. But if the public wanted that and they pushed Congress enough, and we made a decision as a country, this is where we want to go. But it has not. We're not there yet. And I can't tell you if we're going to get there or not. I don't see it, but that doesn't mean it couldn't happen.
Well, we have less than 10 minutes here. Our guest in this hour, Mary Agnes Carey. She is a senior writer for Congressional Quarterly. Its publication's been around since 1945 and specializes in covering what goes on in Congress. It exists on paper. It exists online. If you're interested in taking a look at Congressional Quarterly, you certainly can do that. One of those two ways. And we'll continue to take calls, and I think the next person we have is in Sterling, and that'll be line one. Hello.
Oh, how are you?
Yes, good.
Good. I just finished listening to WNIU DeKalb with the Diane Rehm Show covering the same subject, and then I turned to your program and listened to yours. And I just want to congratulate you people on doing such a better job and taking the time not to just hook into the NPR feed, but really give the specifics. I mean, Diane Rehm spends all her time pointing out that Republicans are bad and the Democrats are right and not talking about the bill. You're telling us about the bill and how it works, and that's great. I just wish I can only listen to you on the Internet because the signal isn't strong enough up in the Northwest Corner of Illinois.
Sure, right.
But I just wish your signal was stronger so I wouldn't have to listen to WNIU. It's not that I favor one university over the other. It's just that you took the time to explain this to us. And I've gone through the bill, and, we have to recognize this bill is designed principally to benefit the poor among us. This is designed in looking at the both the AARP stuff that came out and looking at that portion of the bill. This is for people that just cannot afford to pay the drug bills. They're the principal beneficiaries of the plan. And whatever part of the political spectrum you are on, you have to realize that this is a social obligation we have to meet, and I just find myself completely confused that Diane Rehm would take a position so opposite on this bill. But thank you for your covering the bill. You're doing a great job.
Oh, well, okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Well, I guess we'll just go on here. We'll go to another caller, and the next person in line would be in Urbana, line three. Hello.
I wanted to talk about Tom Scully being quoted that he's glad he won't be around in 2006, and there's been some controversy about him, but since time is short, I think I'll just ask you this. When you said earlier that the bill was intended to make sure companies continue to offer health care benefits to their retirees, there was a recent article in the New York Times that said that only 5% of companies offer that currently, and that their funding of those plans is much, much worse than their funding of the pension obligations in the first place. So putting this all in the perspective, here in this community, the largest employer is the state of University of Illinois. I was wondering, is any of this bill, you were saying they're encouraging companies to stay in?
Same thing for state. I asked that question last week at a briefing. State benefits, state funds that that provide retiree health benefits would get the same subsidy. And what the government's going to do is between the $250 deductible where that cuts off and up to, I want to say it's $5,000 of coverage, what happens is the government writes the employer or the state government a check for 28% of the cost of that of what they're providing. And that subsidy is tax-free, which is another benefit. But state governments would get it just the way as a federal employee, or I beg your pardon, as a private employer does. And as you know, the point you're making is that a lot of companies are dropping retiree coverage anyway, or what they do is they may keep it for current retirees, but new workers come in and they say, don't expect this from us, you're not going to get it. So it's happening anyway, and the hope is that the subsidies will stem that tide. But the state governments get it just like a private employer, so they'll get the same subsidy, the same incentive to keep providing that benefit.
That's good to hear. Thank you.
All right, thanks. We're going to try and get one more caller here. We'll go to Crystal Lake, line number two. We're really short on time, though, but do go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
This is just a subterfuge. This is a bill that nobody wanted, but they want to circumvent universal health care. We could get full senior drugs coverage if we went to a single-payer system. There's a new thing in August in the New England Journal of Medicine that says, actually, we spend $294 billion for our insurance, health insurance right now, and we could save $209 billion of that, which is a big part of it. We could cover all the 40 million uninsured, plus tens of millions of the underinsured, and we could, and the seniors could have full coverage of drugs, and this would be save a lot. This other bill is really to keep the HMOs, insurance companies, and drug companies maximize their profits. This is what this is. They don't want people going over to Canada getting drugs cheaper. This is totally to help the HMOs and insurance and drug companies. And we could live 2 years longer if we had a system like Canada, and we could save money because the bureaucracy of the HMOs and insurance companies, as everybody knows, is very expensive. The CEOs get $1 million stock options and bonuses.
And I'm going to have to get a comment from the guest because we're just about a minute or so left. We did touch on a little earlier on the issue of national health and just how difficult politically it would be to pass such a thing. Although I guess we just have to acknowledge the fact that there are probably some number of people who would agree with everything the caller had to say.
That's right, and critics of this bill say exactly what she's saying. It's a giveaway, in their words, to the insurance industry, the pharmaceutical industry, that it will do more for them than for seniors, and that criticism will surface again next year, I'm sure.
The one thing that we hadn't touched on is this: the bill also will provide, in some cities, some people the opportunity to opt out of Medicare and be covered under a privately privately administered plan. I guess nobody really knows. There's a lot. That's the one where there's a lot of unknowns. Nobody really knows how many people would make that choice. Nobody knows what that would mean for costs.
Right. The thought is that something like 85% of the people who get insurance from their employers, the under 65 population, is currently in some sort of a managed care situation, whether it's an HMO, a closed panel, or a preferred provider organization where you have the option of going to different people, different providers. It's unknown how many insurance companies will get into this, but the argument is people work now, they're in the workforce, they might be they're probably in managed care, they may like their PPO, and then when they retire, they don't have that option. But you'll have to see how many insurance companies get in, what those benefits are, and is that better for you? Would it suit you better than the traditional fee-for-service program?
So much here to talk about. We're going to have to finish right there because we've used our time. I'm sure it's an issue that we'll be discussing again in the future. And I just want to say, Ms. Carey, thanks very much for giving us your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.